All right. Welcome back to University of Minnesota Extension's Nutrient Management Podcast. I'm your host, Nora Nolden, Communications Specialist here at U of M Extension. Today on the podcast, we're talking about fall applications. And we have guests Dan Kaiser, Fabian Fernandez, Melissa Wilson, and Chrisise Moderman here today. So welcome, everybody. Let's do a quick round of introductions.
This is Daniel Kaiser. I'm an Extension Nutrient Management Specialist with the University of Minnesota. My primary specialization is nutrient guidelines for agronomic crops grown in Minnesota.
Fabian Fernandez, also in the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota, working in nutrient management, specifically nitrogen, as it relates to crop production and environmental quality.
I'm Chrisise Moderman. I'm an extension educator for the University of Minnesota Extension. I focus on nutrient management and specifically manure. I'm officed out in the Morris Regional Office.
My name is Melissa Wilson. I'm also working with manure. I'm an extension specialist in manure nutrient management. I also focus on water quality aspects along with maximizing crop production.
All right, well, let's start out talking about current conditions in the field and what this wet fall has meant for fall applications of nutrients and manure.
Well, it's been an interesting year because we went from a lot of rainfall keeping us out of the field, and it's the last couple weeks, it's really been amazing how much has been taken out as it's dried out. There are a few things, though, to watch out for because we've had some pretty prolonged wet areas. They've been wet for an extended period of time that, you know, compaction this fall might be an issue in some of the areas, particularly with some of the heavier equipment that's out there. The other thing we've seen, too, is these cooler temps, too. More questions now on nitrogen applications, particularly since we've seen the soil temp drop below that 50 degree threshold in many areas. So there's a lot of fertilizer going on right now. The other thing, some windy conditions too for a few days that can also cause some issues. So we've kind of, I think, run the gamut when it comes to, you know, what we've seen this fall, where we started and kind of where we're at this point in time.
Yeah. And I know it's easier said than done, but at this time of the year, we all get antsy to try to get all the field work done. I would say that it's important to stop, take a deep breath, and figure out, is this really what I want to accomplish, right? I mean, as Dan mentioned, applying lime or fertilizers when you have really strong winds, you don't know where that fertilizer is ending. You're not getting the spread that you would want. With wet conditions in the field, the compaction is a big issue. You put nutrients in there, but then you may be shortchanging yourself because the soil conditions are not ideal for crop growth later. In terms of nitrogen, a big question with anhydrous ammonia is the soil conditions. Make sure that when you go out, that you get a good seal with the applicator. If the soils are either too wet or too dry, you can lose ammonia to the atmosphere as you apply it if you don't get a proper seal. So the best thing to do is to just do a short pass and then go back, and if you smell ammonia after a few minutes, you know that you're losing ammonia, and so you should probably stop or consider your options there because again, the soil conditions are probably not the best.
And when it comes to manure, there's some compaction issues that can occur when you have a very heavy tanker driving across the field, especially if you're applying liquid manure, which can be very, very heavy. And there's also considerations that need to be taken into for the soil temperature when applying that manure. I know it's been wet out there, and people are trying to get all their nutrients applied and their manure applied. And remember that incorporating that manure into the soil is very important to not lose that nitrogen, but you want to wait until that soil is cool enough, 50 degrees or less.
Yeah, it's really important, especially with these liquid manures, which have a high ammonia content, just like with the anhydrous ammonia applications. You want to keep that into the soil, so making sure you get a good seal and get that incorporated as soon as possible. With the solid manures, that have less ammonia content, like beef bedded pack, dairy bedded pack, Definitely important to get those incorporated, but with less ammonia content, you can wait a day or two to get that done if needed, if that helps with the drier conditions.
Right now with P and K, I think, and particularly with manure as well, too, one thing that we do, you know, with those nutrients, frozen soil is bad when we start talking about applications. So getting those on earlier, certainly I think there's an advantage right now, particularly we're in a situation there should be enough moisture to start dissolving those fertilizer granules or even the manure, maybe starting to get some of that reaction with the soil particles to get it to hold in place. And it's one thing that'll be interesting this year because, you know, last year was an interesting one where we kept thinking we were done in the field after about a week of really cold weather, then it would warm up a week. So we never really know what's going to happen. And that's one of the things with even where our soil temps are now, you know, we get a warm spell for a week or so, we could see those rise. And particularly with some of our nutrient sources, particularly like urea, where we tend to see more rapid conversion, we could actually see some of that conversion occurring even in, if we're at 50 now and we get a warm spell later on. So that's one of the things I said last year was I thought was really interesting, because it'd be about every other week we'd be getting going kind of through this cold and warm cycle where we thought we were done in the field, but then we were still able to get a lot done until the December time frame.
Yeah, and the 50-degree temperature guideline, we talk about it, and sometimes people translate that into, okay, now is the ideal time to start applying, when in reality, the 50-degree temperature is to try to meet the ideal situation with what can be done. Nitrification will happen until the soils freeze, until 32 degrees, and so at 50 degrees, we still will have nitrification happening in the soil, but the amount of nitrification slows down substantially. And so that's why we say you can start when soil temperatures are at 50 degrees, because we realize that we cannot wait until, you know, we are close to freezing before we can start applying nitrogen. At that point, we will not be able to do it physically with equipment. And so that's why we talk about 50 degrees. But I always encourage people to look at the forecast, and if they can wait a few more days, it's even better, because you get lower temperatures, and as Dan mentioned, we have these swings of temperatures going up and down, clear into December, looking at drainage studies where we look at tile drainage. It used to be that by middle of November or end of November for sure you were done for the year, and now we are looking into right before Christmas, we are still out in the field collecting water samples that are coming from those tile lines. And so you know that if the tile is flowing and if there is ammonium transforming to nitrate, that nitrate is subject to leaching losses.
And I think this year, you know, you look at it, it's kind of like other years where, you know, you sit there and wait to get into the field, and then I think everybody gets really antsy after that point in time then to get everything done. And there are certain things that we can look at where we have more flexibility. I think P and K applications are one of those where you actually probably better earlier than later with those particular applications. But with nitrogen, I mean, especially with anybody, we talk about areas of the state where we still have fall urea as a BMP. Those are ones where I would be delaying as late as possible. And, you know, if we can do it with some of those manure sources, particularly some of those high ammonia or those high liquid sources that have a high amount of inorganic N2, those are probably a good idea as well. But we do realize, you know, there's always those logistical questions that a lot of growers have in terms of getting there's only so much time to get everything done. But just looking at it in terms of what's the best option at a given point in time and delaying, as Fabian said, there certainly is some benefits to that if you can afford to delay a little bit, particularly with certain sources of fertilizer.
Any other advice or what growers should be thinking about in terms of nitrogen this fall?
Well, one of the major concerns right now is with urea. We have in Minnesota, we have kind of moved from anhydrous being the primary nitrogen source to urea being the primary source. And so we, as Dan mentioned, in the best management practice guidelines, we talk about urea in the fall being an acceptable option for western parts of the state, but certainly not for the central and south central part of the state. And the reason for that is because the temperatures and the amount of precipitation that we get are not conducive for these fall applications. Urea transforms a lot faster to nitrate than anhydrous ammonia does. And so the challenge has been that now that some there is less availability of anhydrous ammonia as a source, some people think, well, we'll just change the source, we'll go with urea and continue to do the same things that we were doing before. And this is just not a sound practice. You're going to lose nitrogen. We have an ongoing study throughout the state looking at this question of fall versus spring applications of urea. And I can tell you that it is a money waster in terms of applying urea in the fall in central and south central parts of the state. You are going to lose substantial amounts of nitrogen. So you're not going to realize that benefit from a profitability standpoint, but you also are creating issues with the environmental concerns that are around nitrogen in terms of water quality, air quality. We are losing that nitrogen to the environment, and we just cannot do that.
Well, as Fabian said, I think environmental, I mean, issues aside, you look at it in terms of questions we've had in terms of failures for fall urea, and they've been increasing. If you look at the last five, and I think I can go back to when I started about 10 years ago, I'm starting to see more questions, particularly around the Lamberton and that southwest, those areas of having more issues with it. And right now, I mean, we have products out there that are supposed to safen it, nitrification inhibitors that are made for urea. But if you look at it, we just really haven't seen consistent performance. And I think if you look at it in terms of application methods, really the best application method, we talk about some of these products, if we were putting on a urea in a band, really it would have more efficacy because you're just diluting it too much with the broadcast application of urea, where you're not getting enough concentration, which is needed to really delay the nitrification to get to a point in which we can say that these products will safen it like anhydrous. I mean, anhydrous is still the best option that we see for fall applications of nitrogen, and it's just because of the way anhydrous, how it affects the soil surrounding the band. So with fall urea, I mean, particularly I think corn on corn, Fabian, I mean, that's looked really bad. That's one that, you know, if you're looking at earlier applications, and even in the areas in the western part of the state where we suggested corn, soybean are probably a little bit less affected, although there's been a yield decrease from what I've seen, and corn on corn has been the major one.
So some people have asked about nitrification inhibitors with manure, and some of the research coming out of Wisconsin has shown a mixed bag in whether it works or not. Some of the research done here in Minnesota has shown kind of some promising results when you compare manure that's applied with a nitrification inhibitor versus without in different times of the season. Oftentimes the inhibitor will run out and you'll still lose a lot of nitrogen if you apply really early. It may delay it a little bit compared to just raw manure, but it's still, the inhibitors only last a couple of weeks. So if you're applying really early, it's not going to help that much. Now, when you're applying later, some of the research has shown that it can help improve yields, but then you have to really consider the cost offset. Is it improving your yields enough to make up for paying for applying the Instinct with the manure? And that's something that, you know, each individual farmer will have to decide for themselves.
That's one of the things with the manure is, too, is these are liquid manures, right, Melissa? I mean,
yes,
we're dealing with liquids, not dry manure. With dry manure, we don't really have a good option. I know there's been some, you know, recommendations are going in spring, some of these inhibitors across the top after the application. But with the dry manure, you've got more inorganic N, so your loss potential is going to be less.
You mean organic N?
Yes.
The dry manures.
Yes. Okay, thanks for correcting me. So we have more organic N, so you've got more stabilized nitrogen at that point in time that's going to be released over time. So really the issue there is, I mean, cost benefit essentially is going to be there with the liquids. With the dry, there just really isn't a good option. And the other thing too is, if you're picking one of these sources, make sure you've got something that's an effective nitrification inhibitor, because the only source we have right now that's shown consistency has been nitropyrin. So you're talking about the active ingredient in Instinct and Enserve with certain products. And that's the main thing. You can spend money on other products that are out there and not see as good a results. And now I know there's a few other ones coming on the market here I've seen some research on, which show some promise, but really right now nitropyrin is really our best option.
Yeah, and one thing that is important to recognize too is that these nitrification inhibitors are not bulletproof. They will degrade, and they degrade based on temperature as well. There have been studies done where people looked at the effect of temperature. And warmer temperatures, the inhibitor degrades faster, so you have less efficacy. And so waiting until temperatures get cool is not only important to slow down the bacterial activity of the soil that transforms ammonium to nitrate, but it also is important to protect that inhibitor so it stays active longer. I mean, you can have nitropyrin has shown to be effective even into the spring, but you have to have the right conditions. If it's warm, it's not going to last that long. And so I would not say, well, if you're using an inhibitor, you can go earlier in the fall when temperatures are warmer, because you're just not going to have that efficiency. In terms of Instinct, which is also a product with nitropyrin, but it's a slightly different, formulation. It's for instance, for urea or for manure. We are doing work with that, and we have seen very mixed results. The only place where we've seen it work better than other treatments is when you subsurface band urea with the inhibitor, and so you're concentrating the inhibitor with the fertilizer. But it was, again, not a consistent response. And with nitrogen management, you have to look at consistency. That is number one. You have to have something that is consistent to start making decisions. The other part is that when you compare that to a spring application of urea, again, in the central and south central parts of the state especially, every time the spring application was superior than the fall application with inhibitor and in a subsurface band. So when you add the cost of applying the inhibitor, the cost of or the time that it takes to do a subsurface band that is slower, you basically you're counting your losses at that point. You're better off waiting until the spring to do those applications as a broadcast incorporated application without any inhibitor.
I also want to remind everyone that you do have to have a pesticide license to apply Instinct as well. That's particularly important for manure. A lot of times people don't realize that, so that's been a big kind of issue in Minnesota's people not knowing that.
All right, let's switch gears and talk about soil sampling for P and K.
Well, one of the things right now with these wet conditions, sampling can be challenging, particularly central and, let's say, west central Minnesota with some of the high clay soils. Really, right now, I think a lot of the sampling would be done, that fields that we're going to be sampling, because if we want to use that those values to make the fertilizer decisions, we'd have to have some of those values back from the lab. So that's the main thing right now, is just sampling. Just make sure you're getting a good sample. Our tests are calibrated for a 6 to 8 inch sampling depth. If you go any deeper than that, you'll likely get lower results. If you go shallower, you're going to get higher results, just because of how the stratification works. So with those nutrients, PK, zinc, if you're sampling for those, that's one thing that I would suspect to see at this given point in time. In terms of applications, one thing I will be doing over the fall is updating the removal database, just seeing where we're at. Our P and K removal values, I've been trying to update that with information out of our current studies, just to see where things are at. Because I know some growers are out there applying removal-based recommendations. One thing we've seen, though, is that in the last, let's say, 10, maybe 15 years, I know, Fabian, you looked at this in Illinois as well, is when you were there, that we saw a lot of those numbers start to decline for P and K. So as we've seen the amount of nitrogen in the grain drop, we've seen some of these other nutrients drop too. So the overall removal rates haven't increased as drastically as we've seen the yield increases. And that's the main thing, is that, I mean, we know that yield and removal are tied together. But from what I'm seeing, and that's one of the things that I've really put a big focus on with a lot of my research, is what do we need for removal? Because we don't need to target the exact removal on a year-to-year basis to see our soil test kind of maintain. So the interesting thing, I think this year we'll be looking at K-tests, what will happen. In the dry years, we've tended to see a lot of lower K-tests, so a lot of concern from growers that we've seen a plummeting value, and that tends to happen because potassium tends to be tied up in the stalks, particularly corn stalks, and the more moisture we have, typically the quicker release we're going to have. So this year I'd suspect that we'd see probably more average, see maybe not higher levels, but see things kind of more in line of what you would expect just because of the moisture we've had and the fact that that crop sat in the field for quite a while, leaching some of the potassium out of the stalks.
Yeah, and one thing that is kind of interesting with potassium too, especially in the fields where you were delayed to harvest and the plants were mature and just sitting there, is that this leaching that Dan is mentioning happens at that point. And so we actually did a study where we were looking at where to soil samples with relationship to the crop rows, and we find that in situations like that where the crop is basically leaching a lot of potassium before harvest, you can actually end up with kind of a high concentration of potassium right in the row. And so if you are in that situation, or if you're always planting this in the exact same position with RTK, for instance, making sure that you take a representative sample, that you're not always sampling in the band or in the row or only between the rows, but kind of a random sampling across those areas is important, so you don't bias your results towards one or the other.
I think we could talk probably for another half hour of potassium if we really wanted to, but with soybeans, I don't think that issue is probably as severe. No. Because of leaf drop, you tend to get quicker
it's more
release.
Uniform. Yes, yeah. And it's more uniform. The same thing with corn. If you harvest corn before you get a lot of leaching, at that point all the residue is spread fairly uniformly, so you don't have that issue. But it's in situations where you either are always planting in the same position, or where, you know, you have delayed harvest and those plants have been sitting there for quite a while since maturity, and they're basically leaching all the potassium right on that spot.
And I just want to give a reminder, when applying manure, in addition to sampling your soil for nutrients, also sample your manure. Knowing what your actual nutrient content of your manure is very important. Don't rely on those book values to give you what you need. That way, when you calculate your application rate, you know that you're being as accurate as possible.
Any other advice or things that people should be thinking about at this time of year with manure?
Well, I can come back to Chrisise's comment there, and I guess with you two here, I mean, just a question for you. In terms of analysis, what would you typically recommend for a grower to analyze in terms of manure? What nutrients should they be looking at, and what things should they be getting in their analysis?
Well, a lot of our recommendations have said get total nitrogen, total phosphorus, potassium. I also am really starting to look at knowing the ammonia content of the manure, too. I think that's going to be really important for knowing how fast your nitrogen is going to be available to your plants. And in a lot of other states, they actually make their recommendations based off the ammonia content as well. And that's something we might be moving towards in the future here in Minnesota. For instance, things like swine manure, finishing swine manure, are sometimes up to 80% ammonia. Like, knowing that ahead of time can give you a better idea of when it will be most efficient to apply your manure. Versus something like a bedded beef pack that has very little ammonia to it. So again, kind of understanding how long that's going to take to release will be important.
Yeah, knowing your total ammonia content and then knowing your total nitrogen content, when you subtract those, then you get the nitrogen that will be released more slowly, that organic nitrogen. Other things you can test for, if you look for on a list of testing services that most manure testing sites provide, there's a whole host of things. You could test for micronutrients, although we technically, and we really don't recommend a lot of people to do that. If you If you suspect that you might have a micronutrient deficiency, you could test for, say, sulfur or something in the manure. Also, if you have a concern of salts in your soils, if you have saline or sodic soils, you might consider testing for the amount of salts in the manure.
And sulfur is one that I get questions on, particularly with manure applications. The problem with it, it's similar to nitrogen, is that most labs are going to give you a total sulfur number, but if you look at it, is that more important than, say, ammonium is to total nitrogen? So that's one of the things that there's some more questions on that. I think we've been kind of saying around 60 to 65% availability of the sulfur somewhere in there, but that's going to vary greatly based on species and just what form of sulfur is in there. The other for the micros would be zinc, although you have to kind of know is depending on, because I know zinc is sometimes added in there either with, I think, the foot dips.
Sometimes in the diet, yeah.
So that, I really rarely would expect to see much of a zinc problem, particularly in manured soils. If they're heavily manured with that, the soil test should be fairly high. So the other micros, it really doesn't matter. And then with sulfur, I think it's kind of a separate animal that we don't know at this point. It's a speciating sulfur in that there hasn't been a lot of data on that from what I've seen.
Yeah, it's definitely something we need to look more into.
I get more questions on it. So
I guess just for fall applications, try to get on the soil is cool. Try to avoid frozen or snow-covered applications if possible. Some of our research has shown most of the nutrients, especially if you're on snow, most of the nutrients will just end up washing off unless they kind of really slowly melt and get to the soil before massive flash flood events.
And with your manure, you need to plan ahead and plan for storage for the winter. If you are in a time crunch, if you're really wet, if you can't get as much manure on as you would like, at least try to apply the amount of manure needed so that you won't run out of storage space over the winter, and so you wouldn't need to resort to applying on top of snow or for frozen ground.
Now, if you do have to apply on frozen ground or snow, of course, we know there are still some daily haul operations. You know, the flattest land possible. Make sure you're checking your soil test levels. You want to avoid really high P soils and those sorts of things as well. So again, always planning ahead, making sure you have these things figured out before it becomes a problem is really important.
All right, any other closing thoughts?
Just one quick thing that I don't think we mentioned with P and K, especially for K, but is the time of sampling. If you are used to sampling in the spring, don't go and try to compare values from samples collected in the fall. Try to keep that consistent.
And then I think the other thing too is if you're you didn't get sampled, you wanted to sample and you were going to apply, just be careful because you may want to hold off sampling until, you know, mid to the end of next year and try to get it on before application, because we do see some inflation. And this goes for manure as well. If you sample too soon after an application, you can see some pretty inflated values. And a lot of times that can cause some concern. Then when the next time you sample, you see a large drop. And when you've got a number that was artificially created versus what should have been there, just be careful with that. And just try to sample accordingly to try to make sure that you're not overestimating what's there. And don't get too concerned about if you see some of that drop if you did sample too soon after an application.
Okay, well, thanks everyone. We would like to thank the Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council, AFREC, for supporting this podcast. For the latest information on nutrient management, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at UMN Nutrient MGMT, and the manure handle is
at UMN Manure.
Got it. So you can also send us your questions there for the next podcast episode. Thanks for listening.